We'll call to order the Stanislaus County Employees Retirement Association meeting on December 10th, 2014. Can we have the roll call, please?
Gordon Ford?
Here.
Maria Deanda?
Here.
Donna Riley?
Here.
Jason Gordo?
Here.
Mike Lynch? Jim DeMartini?
Here.
Jeff Grover?
Here.
Darren Garrett?
Here.
Joan Clendenin?
Here.
Mike O'Neill?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Let's start with announcements.
All right. If you already don't know, Mr. Jim Oliveira here. He was sitting in for Fred today. Fred has other business that he's attending to, but he will be available on conference call later today.
Other announcements?
Yes, I have one. Dancero was successful in filling our vacant position, and I'd like to introduce our new accounting specialist. This is Deanne Corbisser over here. And Deanne started with us about a month ago, and we're excited and thrilled that she's picking up everything as fast as we were hoping for. We did steal her away from Gordon's department, so I'm sorry, Gordon, but I'm not sad about that. But I wanted to thank you for all the time that she was.
It's a good reflection.
Yes, thank you.
Yes.
Well, you got a good employee.
We did. Thank you.
And I guess I'll put my plug in. If anybody hasn't paid the property tax, you got three more hours.
Paid mine.
Okay, we'll move on to consent items. Item 5. Anybody need to pull anything?
I move to approve.
I'll second.
We've got a motion and second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Great. Moving right along to item 6.
All right.
This looks like you take over for quite a while here.
Item 6A, this is a discussion and action item concerning the contract governing law and jurisdiction policy. Staff's recommendation today is going to be approve the contract governing law and jurisdiction policy. So when we were in negotiations recently with one of the real estate managers, it quickly became obvious to us that it would be desirable for Stan Serra to have a contract language in place or a policy in place that dictated contract language regarding jurisdiction for legal cases in case we got involved with litigation with folks, partnerships, agreements that we enter into with other people that do business with Stan Serra. So we put together some contract language that's going to go into our policies. It was approved by Fred Silva, this general contract language. And essentially, if you've had a chance to read this, says that any matters that come up legally or litigation issues, that they would be handled or taken care of in the state of California or some jurisdiction within the state of California. There's advantages to that. The first and foremost is that our folks that represent Stan Serra legally can practice in this state, whereas if we had to do something out of state, those people wouldn't necessarily be able to represent Stan Serra. So, again, staff's recommendation here is to approve the contract governing law and jurisdiction policy that's before you. Any questions?
You know, I just remember a few years back, and I'm not sure, maybe Darren was here. It's been a while. But we actually had a money manager, and I couldn't remember if it was a particular investment that we were making, had to be in the jurisdiction of, I'm guessing here, Vermont. And that's... So there was some, under this particular policy perhaps, we might have been restricted from making an investment there. So it was kind of it's the only time I'd ever seen that happen, but it had to be under that state's jurisdiction.
Not necessarily. I mean, if they wanted to do business with us, they might change their policy.
I'm just saying, commenting that's something that we probably just need to be aware of.
It's not currently part of the county purchasing policy. However, it is our procedure. I mean, we typically would have things under the California jurisdiction. It's really the better choice. We're more familiar with the laws. And there are lots of companies out there that cover any particular niche. I would say if we couldn't do business with that one, there probably would be another of the same quality to be able to choose.
And that's a good point. We reached out to the county to find out if they actually had any written policies in place that we could just piggyback on. Mm-hmm. And we got the impression that it was kind of an unwritten policy that they do this anyway. So we figured we'd make it easier on ourselves and easier on any future negotiations that we have to get into by sticking this in our policy. And in fact, the next item, you'll see specifically why this has become advantageous to us.
I move approval.
Second.
Moved in second. Any further discussion? If not, I'll call for the motion. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Okay.
Item 6B, contract governing law and jurisdiction policy regarding real estate investments. This is a discussion and action item, and staff will be recommending approving the contract governing law and jurisdiction policy regarding real estate investments. So piggybacking off of what I talked about earlier, when we started this negotiation process with this last real estate investment manager, they needed a policy. They needed for them to be able to agree to put this language in their contract. They needed us not only to have a policy that says we need to have litigate matters, legal matters within the state of California. They needed it specifically to say, point to real estate investments specifically. So at first we decided that we were just going to do this policy to cover real estate investments just to satisfy the manager that we are looking to partner up with on this investment. But then we also decided that maybe it would just be better to do a general policy, which is what the item prior to this was. But just to summarize here, the manager needed for us to have a policy that specifically said real estate investments, agreements, partnerships had to be litigated in California. So this is specifically for the one real estate investment that we are hopefully going to sign, seal the deal here in closed session later on today.
I would move that we adopt that if there's no discussion.
Second.
Moved in second. Any discussion? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Passing.
Item 6C, Pyramus Global Advisors performance-based fee structure. This is a discussion and action item. Staff here is recommending entering into a performance-based fee structure agreement with Pyramus Global Advisors. So a while back, Pyramus was here and discussing performance issues, and the board asked staff at that time to look into a performance-based fee structure with Pyramus. Recently, we received the proposal back from Pyramus, and we pretty much did an extensive analysis. I think SIS even looked at it as well. We did our own in-house analysis. And one of the things that I'd like to say is that in general, there's really no way of knowing what is the best path to go down to at this time, whether you want to stick with just an assets under management structure or you want to create some incentive-based fee structure. So what we did is we have excess return history data from Pyramus for about the last 6 or 7 years. And we did several analysis on this data. And we did three in particular just to kind of get an idea of what we would have paid had this type of fee arrangement been in place since 2006, essentially. The first analysis we did is we took 12-month consecutive periods, random 12-month consecutive periods within the last 6 years, and assumed that those patterns would repeat themselves over the next 6-7 years. And the reason we chose consecutive 12-month periods is because we feel that there is some correlation between excess returns from month to month. They're not necessarily independent, which our data has actually shown that to be. It's not the case that if a manager has a positive excess return in one quarter that he's not going to have a positive excess return in the next quarter. There is correlation between consecutive months. We've noted that in the data. We looked at that, so we did these. We randomly picked 12-month consecutive periods, did the analysis, and on average, the annual fee was, I believe, 32 basis points per year in that analysis. The next analysis, we chose simple random monthly historical returns, where we just looked at all the returns, monthly excess returns for the last 6-7 years. We just had the computer pick one and stick it into the program and look at what the average annual fee was that we paid to Pyramus, and that, again, turned out to be 32 basis points. And then finally, we took the last, since 2006, we took all the excess returns that we, that Pyramus experienced. We assumed the exact same pattern, that exact same pattern would repeat itself over the next 6 years, stuck that in, looked at the fee structure, and that actually turned out to be, on average, 30 basis points a year. So all these scenarios were considerably lower than the current 47 basis point fee that we're paying Pyramus today. One thing I will tell you, though, is that there were years in all of these analyses, in the third one where we actually picked random excess returns, I'm almost finished, that there were years where the fee was greater than 47 basis points. So what we did is, after we got all this data, put this all together, we did 156 random scenarios, picking random monthly returns. And on the second page here of the agenda item, you'll see a distribution of annual basis points, the fees that we would pay on an annual basis point. And you can see from this distribution that only 3% of the time was the annual fee greater than what we currently pay right now. So based on what Pyramus has done for us in the past, this appears to be a favorable fee schedule for Stansera. And before I throw it out to you to ask any questions, I'd ask Paul and Nate if you guys concur with me, because I know we haven't had a chance to talk about this yet.
No, most definitely, and I think it's a byproduct of what their participation rate is at 8%, which is the performance-based fee carry. Standard in the industry would be 15 or 20%. So they are proposing a lower participation rate than what is normal on performance-based fees. And I think the product is what Rick stated, that this is a satisfactory proposed fee schedule for a performance-based fee. It brings Pyramus in line with LSV on international equity, and both being performance-based. And I think it's a, in our opinion, we agree with Rick's analysis and would advocate accepting this.
All right. Any questions?
I have a couple questions. How long, so if we elect this, which is what you're proposing, how long is that term? When are we able to renew that or abandon that if it becomes, if it goes the other way,
sure,
than the way it's happened in the last 6 years? And then is this incentivizing them to take excess risk or change their strategy?
Good question. Feel free to jump in here. We can terminate this at any time we want. The only thing that would be required is that at the point in time that we would choose to terminate this and go back to the old schedule, we would obviously be required to pay them anything that's owed them. So we can't terminate it after they've had a couple good years.
We can't say, we owe you $300,000, we're out of this deal.
What's that?
It would be a catch-up?
No, we have to, when we terminate them, we have to make them whole as of the point that we terminate them, if they're in the black, so to speak. Yeah. Because part of this performance-based fee schedule is we only pay them this performance fee every quarter. So there's a chance. It's always going to be a time that we owe them money, or, well, if they've done well, we owe them money.
Hopefully we owe them money.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And
yes, we're ignoring the positive side of this deal.
Yeah.
The years you looked at were 2006.
Correct. September of 2014. We looked at their performance from 2006 to September of 2014.
We would add also
10 years?
8 years. A little over 8 years.
Okay.
And also in response to Jason's question about changing behavior,
yeah,
we would say that is highly unlikely for the following reasons. One, this is a very large firm. It's a big institutional. It's not a small boutique where it might make a difference to change the risk to get more money. Two, there's a lot of product assets in the international growth product also. This account frankly, is not a huge account within their total product assets. And it would be highly unlikely that they would want this account to look very much different than their other accounts they're managing, even on an asset-based fee. So,
well, we would assume we're getting their best thinking anyway.
We would assume that we're getting the same thinking we've been getting.
Yeah. We would assume that the best thoughts are the right thoughts that they've executed and implemented right in our current portfolio.
Right, and their behavior would not change. Yes.
How hard would it be to tell they made a change in behavior?
Their risk profile would, there's tracking error, or let me be more specific. Right, the standard deviation of their returns to the benchmark would start to deviate, and that would be a huge red flag. And it's unlikely they would do that, because when consultants like us go to do a search, we look not only at the returns, but more at the risk. And if this manager's risk deviated beyond what we consider a normal range significantly over an extended period of time, they're going to disqualify themselves right off the bat from a real competitive search. So,
and the other area is the return specific to our account versus their composite returns, which are all of their accounts and their product
right
together. If those two returns start to deviate, that's something we can watch too to make sure they're not changing.
So can I say that you would be able to monitor that and come back very quickly with a statement that such a thing happened?
Absolutely.
And just to add to that, we plan on actually putting out a quarterly risk report next year. And I can tell you right now that as of the point in time that we enter into this agreement with them, it's very easy to, using statistical methods, to determine whether there has been a significant change mm-hmm. in the risk that the manager has been taking. So we will definitely be able to see if that's the case.
Well, they generally publish their holdings right across their entire portfolio.
I mean, they share with us, I mean, that's proprietary, but within days, like the top 10 report that we do, that's not published. They just send that to us.
Well, but we know what we own, mm-hmm. and you know what we own, mm-hmm. and you know what other clients that use that mm-hmm. same right. manager own.
Right.
So it'd be very easy to say, yes. A, B, and C, one of these kids is doing his own thing. Yeah. It's not working. Right.
Absolutely.
And you're right, qualitatively. And again, quantitatively, let me tell you, it's very easy to determine whether there are changes been made yeah. just by monitoring the tracking error.
It's not just on the downside. It could be
absolutely.
On the upside. In our, if we start outperforming by 2-3%,
right.
everyone else, that's a
that may
point.
Not be a good thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if it's appropriate this time, but I move that we accept the policy as stated and recommended by staff.
I'll second it so we can continue the discussion.
What is the likely difference in terms of real dollars?
Well, what we've shown here is that on average, it's about 15 basis points, right?
Yeah, but what does that translate to?
So what is that? What's the portfolio size, 120 million?
Sorry,
I don't remember.
I think it's 160.
It's around 160, 170. So
yeah,
200.
Yeah. 60.
It's in the hundreds of thousands.
225,000. About 225,000.
It's meaningful.
It is very meaningful, yeah.
Okay.
I think Jason had a motion.
We have a motion, a second. Any further discussion? If not, I'll call for the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Passes.
Okay. Item 6D. This is a discussion and action item. Staff's recommendation will be adoption of a system normal retirement age and bona fide separation from service definition. And I am going to turn this item over to Ms. Dawn Lee.
Hello. The first thing I need to tell you is that on the second page of the agenda under risk, I put none because I was looking at this on the positive side. If we do approve this, there is no risk in approving this. However, I didn't think of the other side. There is a risk if we do not approve this, because this item has to do with our voluntary compliance program with the Internal Revenue Service. And so we got our letter last year, but then they gave us certain steps that we need to meet at certain times before our next filing. So one of those items is what we're going to be looking at now, and this is for normal retirement age and a bona fide separation of service. It's important that we do this so that we stay in compliance and before our next filing, which is coming right up next month. And we have asked you to approve the normal retirement age using the IRS safe harbor method. And that will be age 50 for safety members and age 62 for general members. Now, this is not going to have much of an effect on how we're doing things now. Where this becomes very important is when a person retires and they want to return to work for any Stancera-covered employer. When PEPRA was adopted, it set a certain criteria that there has to be a 180-day break in service before a member can come back to work, unless they're a safety member returning to a safety position, then they are exempt from that 180-day rule. Now, this part is going to add a second set of criteria that needs to be reviewed when someone wants to be returned. If we were to have a safety member that retires after age 50, they want to come back, they're exempt from the PEPRA 180-day rule, and because they're at normal retirement age, they would not have to take the 60-day bona fide separation of service required by this. However, if we had a safety member who actually retired prior to normal retirement age, so we could have a safety member retire at age 48. If that member chooses to return to work as a safety member, they're exempt from the PEPRA 180-day rule, but they would not be exempt here. They must be separated from service for a minimum of 60 days. They cannot have an agreement with the employer to return to work prior to that time, so they can't make this arrangement before they retire. Because they're exempt from the PEPRA rule, they could then come back after 60 days. There are very few people that retire, very few safety members retiring before age 50, so it's a very narrow group that we may be looking at as far as safety. Now, with general members, it's really not going to make much of a difference for them, because general members, all of them are required to wait 180 days before they can return under PEPRA. So saying that people who are retiring that want to return, yes, return to work.
Not just new hires, everybody.
Yeah, everybody is affected by PEPRA.
Retirees.
Is part of PEPRA, yes. And so if a general member, whether they're under 62 or over 62, they're going to have to meet the 180-day rule for PEPRA, which is a stricter rule than the 60-day rules established here under this. And so it's really not going to have an effect on our general members. And by adopting the safe harbor method with an age 50 for safety, we think this will have a very, very small effect on being able to return safety members to work timely as well.
Does this affect? Does this have any effect on, speaking for the general members,
mm-hmm.
There's the caveat about if it's an essential skill that they have.
Okay, now they are required to wait the 180 days. They have to have an essential skill to be able to bring them back to work,
right,
on the part-time basis, maximum of 960 mm-hmm. per calendar year. However, if there is an emergency, PEPRA allowed that the employer can take it to their governing board and have it approved, but not on a consent item, and they can get this person back to work before 180 days. That stipulation is also allowed here. So we're not limiting people being able to return to work in case of an emergency.
Is it the 180 days or 60 days?
Both. Both have the same exemption, okay, that if it's declared an emergency and that person
who
needs to be.
Who defines emergency?
That it is, it's all lined out in the PEPRA stipulation. So it has to be an essential position that has an essential function. If they don't fill the position, it will cause the stopping of business. I mean, it has to be a very serious,
It would be the employer, right, wouldn't it?
Huh?
The employer would have to make the determination.
Yes, and so the employer would then have to take it to their governing body to make right. their case to the governing body, and then the Board of Supervisors or City Council, depending on who is the governing body, would then make that determination if it meets the criteria.
Yep.
So essentially, the IRS mm-hmm. is saying to maintain your tax qualifying status, if you retire after the normal retirement age that the system has set, which is what we're asking you today, you can go to work and do whatever you want. However, if you want to retire prior to this normal retirement age that we set, you have to have a bona fide separation of service before you can go back to work. And if you don't, then the Stancera board has to stop this person's benefit and reinstate this person until there actually is a bona fide separation from service.
So or they meet retirement age.
Right, or they hit the normal retirement age. So what we're asking us or you today, so we can maintain our tax qualifying status, is that you pick this normal retirement age and you accept staff's recommendation of the definition of what a bona fide separation from service actually is. And we just didn't make up the bona fide separation from service. We pretty much took what everybody else is doing, and we used the 60-day rule because CalPERS is using it. I can't tell you any other reason why we chose that other than that.
Is there a mechanism set up to notify you so you know when this happens?
I'll let Don explain that. We talked about that.
I know, we
hear what you're saying.
So what we will do is when people are retiring, we will be adding another form to our retirement packet where we will be counseling everyone that retires that these are the rules and the person will be signing this form acknowledging that they have not made any prior arrangements to come back to work at a specific time. They know that they must have this bona fide separation in service if they are under retirement age. We line it all out. We counsel them at the time of retirement. They sign the form. There is already a process in place for when the employers that we cover are bringing a retiree back to work. They already have to go through certain steps to make sure that they qualify under the PEPRA rules. So we can now incorporate this in with that type of evaluation that's being done at the time that they're getting ready to offer to bring someone back to work. So we're going to be monitoring outgoing, we're going to be doing the counseling and monitoring very closely on the incoming of retirees.
And we understand that.
Pardon me?
We understand that an attestation from the employee at retirement not going to guarantee that there's been no predetermined arrangement to come back to work, but there's no way we can monitor that. This is the best we feel we can do.
Well, this is a big shift from pre-PEPRA.
Mm-hmm.
Arrangements were very public.
Yes.
And I'm sure that there's a lot of behind-the-scenes talking about coming back to work with employees before they retire, but we can't detect that.
As long as it's not a formal arrangement.
Right.
Yes, if it's discussed next to the water cooler, we're not going to know about it. But we do monitor the Board of Supervisors' agendas, items, and so when they come out, if we see that they are going to the board to ask to bring a retiree back or something like that, we're monitoring that as well so we could try to get involved very quickly and make sure that everything's in place.
Can I do one thing first?
Sure.
Let me summarize what you're going to be motioning here. I want to read the definition of the bona fide separated service because that's really not spelled out in staff's recommendation. So the retirement ages that we're going to be recommending, the normal retirement ages, are 50 and 62, which, again, as Don had alluded to, those are the safe harbor ages from the IRS's perspective. And then the definition of bona fide separation of service that we're recommending is, there's three things here. The member has not entered into any predetermined agreement with the county or a participating employer under the association prior to retirement to return to work after retirement, regardless of the length of separation. Number two is prior to entering into an agreement to return or returning to employment with the county or a participating employer under the association while retired, the member must have a separation from service of at least the greater of A. Any required separation from service prior to return to work required under the terms of PEPRA, or B, 60 calendar day separation from service, so whichever is greater. And I think Don explained the fact that PEPRA requires the 180-day break for general members, but they say safety members can come back right away, but IRS doesn't allow safety members to come back right away. That's why we have the greater of the PEPRA rules or the 60-day. And then three, the member may be employed by the county or a participating employer under the association prior to the time in Sections 1 and 2 for emergency situations as defined in Government Code Section 8558 and under the PEPRA return to work restrictions. And that's allowed by both the IRS and PEPRA. So they're in agreement on that issue. That's the definition of bona fide separation of service and the two normal retirement ages that we're asking.
Yeah,
Okay, now I make a motion.
Good.
To support staff's recommendation for the system minimum retirement age and bona fide separation from service.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? If not, I'll call for the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Passes.
All right, item 6E, discussion.
I don't know when you had time to do all this in jury duty, too.
I did it after jury duty. What's done?
Item 6E, discussion in action. Adoption of the model tax compliance regulations received and approved by the IRS. Staff recommendation here today is adopt the resolution adopting the tax compliance regulations for the Stanislaus County Employees Retirement Association. And I'm going to turn this over to Dawn, and she has one other change regarding this item to tell you about.
Okay. Again, the same thing with this. I was looking at the positive side, where there was no risk to adopt these. There is a risk if we do not. Again, we will not be in compliance if we do not adopt the code sections. But the important thing I need to tell you is that there's an awful lot of these, and we got the date right in all of these, but in the resolution itself, we have December 10th right here where we're asking that it be effective December 10th. That date should be January 1st, 2015 to match each of the actual individual code sections that we're going to be asking you to adopt.
What page are you on?
It's on the resolution itself, which is attachment 1. And so it's on the second page of that.
So the resolution adopts all the regulations that follow the resolution.
On the first page.
On the first page, I'm sorry.
To approve the resolution.
Yep.
So the one that's in that handout.
Right there, you got it. You're holding it.
But there you go, yeah. And it's right down here. It says, therefore, be resolved.
Okay.
Yes. So that needs to be January 1st, 2015, so that it matches exactly with all of the individual code sections. Now, these are IRS code sections that this says that we need to do this as a correction from our voluntary correction program with the IRS. It wasn't that we particularly were doing anything incorrect on this. It was that the IRS wants us to adopt these so that they will be in connection with the 37 Act, trying to keep everything lined up there. To make sure, because the 37 Act didn't specifically say that you had to follow these code sections, so the IRS wants us to officially adopt them so that we will be in line with both the 37 Act and the IRS. So it's really pretty much a formality, but all of these are IRS codes that tell us how we have to treat certain kinds of income coming in, whether we're accepting rollovers or money that we're rolling out, and the income limits that were restricted to the amounts that we can pay retirees, and so they all have to do, and adopting the normal retirement age, and so they all have to do with keeping us in compliance so that we can maintain our tax status.
Are these the same IRS code sections that CRCA and SACRS are trying to get changed legislatively?
The IRS codes?
Well, no. They're trying to get the act.
So they've already done that.
Oh, they've done
yeah.
that.
Yeah. So okay. Just to summarize what Dawn said, so a couple of years ago, the IRS came around and said to all the 37 Act systems, we're going to go ahead and say you're in compliance so you can maintain your tax qualifying status. However, you guys need to fix the 37 Act code because there are things in there that are in contravention to IRS rules. So just recently, SACRS and the legislature, SACRS committee, brought to the legislature cleanup to change 37 Act code that would be in compliance with IRS rules. And so all we're doing now is now that everything's in compliance, we're adopting the regulations that the IRS says you need to adopt after you clean up 37 Act code to remain in compliance. And that's what this is about.
So what's the penalty if we don't?
You could lose your tax qualifying status, and then you'd have to start paying taxes on your benefits.
$4 billion fund.
I'll move approval.
You too.
I'll second that.
Moved and approved. Okay. Any discussion?
IRS code.
You need a motion to clean up that Language two.
Do we need to say adopt it with the change, included change?
Oh, yes, with the change.
Was included in the motion?
Correct.
Okay. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes unanimously. Okay, now. Do we want to do the members forum first, or do we want to do closed session?
Let's do members forum first.
Can you do members forum first, put our?
Yep.
Okay, Maria, anything? I assume you have nothing?
Just happy holidays.
No.
Yeah.
I have nothing.
Something going on, something going on.
Well, wait a minute, need a moment?
Nothing.
Nothing for me.
And nothing, Mr. Chairman?
Just wish everybody happy holidays.
Okay. Anything, Ian?
Timing of this meeting, we don't have the November report, but policy index was up about 1.25% in November, so another positive month, and happy holidays.
Okay.
Ditto.
Nothing from me.
On the new bona fide separation language that we just adopted, are we going to get that out to the departments?
Yes, that's going to be a challenge for us to be able to explain this to them in a way everybody understands. But we're going to start in this process right away, take our time, and make sure that we get something out there that everybody can understand.
Perfect. All I have. Happy holidays, everyone.
Come back here.
Staff?
I do one thing. I forgot to say an announcement. Sorry. We have a closed session, a couple closed session items. One, we need Paul and Nate to stick around. Then two, we need you to get out, but we need you to stay here because we're going to give you a little celebration before you go off after the meeting today.
So don't run off too quick.
All right.
That gets confusing. Okay.
I did have a question. I noticed that the list keeps getting longer of deferred retirements. Is there something new going on there, or?
I don't know. Do you know of anything that might be causing the deferred retirements to go up?
The economy's improved. We have a high turnover, even of new staff. They take a position, they work with us for 6 months to a year, and all of a sudden they're leaving employment. You can only assume they're finding other positions elsewhere. Outside the county.
Those are generally gains for the system, by the way.
It's a demographic thing?
It's a gain, an actuarial gain. Because generally, these people are not sticking around as long as the actuary thought they would stick around. So, in general, deferred retirements are a gain for the system.
And then the other question I had was, on the list of retirements, you list the agency, but you don't list whether or not with the sheriff's department, whether or not they're safety or general. I mean, we assume they're all general, but wouldn't an asterisk or something indicate safety so we can, in our heads, figure out what's going on?
Is that something we can easily do, Dawn, each month? Denote whether it's a safety or general?
I believe so.
Okay.
I think that's doable. It
should be fairly easy. Right. And I don't know where these came from, but thank you.
You're welcome.
And you have one of those.
I do. I have something for members forum. We talked last meeting about the new committees. I haven't heard from anyone yet, but I just wanted to let you know that there are some defaults for the committees. So for the due diligence committee, Donna Riley will be the committee chair by default. And also by default, the performance review and compensation committee will be Maria DeAnda, Gordon Ford, and Donna Riley. So that leaves the internal governance committee, all three spots open. And then I wanted to let you know that the strategic planning and objectives committee is going to be disbanded for 2015 because we have our strategic plan in place and we won't need to meet until that gets closer to completion.
I'd like to stay on the internal governance.
Okay, so if you guys could email what your wishes are. If we don't hear from you, the new chair, Maria DeAnda, and Rick will be meeting no later than January 7th so that we can get an item together for you to bring in our first meeting on January 14th to vote on the new committees.
You got power.
That's all I have.
All righty, so we have to go into a closed session. I'll need a motion for that.
So moved.
Second.
Moved in second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? No. We move into closed session. Back in session.
I have a report out from closed session, item 7B. On May 27th, 2014, in closed session, action was taken on item 9A. Motion was made by Jeff Grover and seconded by Jason Gordo to allocate $15 million to Morgan Stanley Prime Property Fund and directed staff to begin legal review process with Hanson and Bridget and negotiate the contracts. Roll call vote carried unanimously. Today, December 10th, 2014, in closed session, action was taken on item 7B. After legal review and negotiation process with Hanson and Bridget, a motion was made by Jeff Grover and seconded by Michael O'Neill to commit $15 million to Morgan Stanley Prime Property Fund and sign the commitment letter. Motion carried unanimously. That's all I have.
Okay, meeting adjourned.